Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct on Devil Radio. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. As I said earlier, if you are at all interested in redistricting and reapportionment, you're going to want to hear my interview with Professor Matt Petering of UWM in the second hour. Professor Petering has developed an algorithm that redistricts in a even fairer and more compliant way with the Voting Rights Act, with compactness of boundaries and even-handedness than Governor Evers' maps. Governor Evers' maps are a huge improvement over the corrupt gerrymandered maps of the Republican gerrymandered majority in the Senate bill. It's passed the House. It's going to Evers for signature. And Evers is proposal, the Democratic proposal so far, Evers' maps, and they are better. But Professor Petering is an expert. He's developed this algorithm, and he's revealing it in this interview today on Devil Radio, and he's available for consultation with anybody who's interested in fair maps. Anybody who's interested in fair maps. I've talked to him about this algorithm, and I'll tell you something. This is something that's got to be considered by any court or special master if it's turned over to them for resolution. Okay, the Rittenhouse case. Rittenhouse case goes to the jury this morning. The closing arguments yesterday, and then jury instructions. Jury instructions apparently around 40 pages in a complex case. That's not unheard of. The closing arguments are very lengthy. I've given many closing arguments in my career. I don't think I've ever given any that combined took up a big chunk of the day, but I listened in on some of the closing argument, a lot of the prosecution, a little of the defense. I think the prosecutors have done a very fine job. There's one surprising thing, at least to jurors, that's going to happen. I've seen it before, and jurors usually aren't pleased with this. There are 18 jurors convened. Two of them got dismissed during the trial, one of them for cracking a joke about a bad thing and the other one for some other reason. But you only have 12 jurors. You only have 12 jurors. There are 18 jurors. All 18 of them, even though they may not think about it, six of them are not going to sit on this case, and yet they've burned a couple of weeks. And so there will be a lottery drum, and they'll reach in and they'll pull out six names, and they will become alternates. And they will not be the ones participating. The remaining 12 will do it. If one of the remaining 12, God forbid, for instance, has a heart attack or an emergency and can't deliberate, then one of the alternates will be stuck in there. The reason for this procedure in this kind of a case is it's very high profile. You don't want to screw up a trial because you don't have enough jurors. But it was very routine in cases I've been in. They'd have 14 jurors, and then two of them would be yanked, and they were not too pleased. I mean, they would go, hey, wait a minute. I sat here for two weeks, and what? This is, what am I, chopped liver or what? Well, that's just the way it is. And I'll give you my thoughts on how it went. I think it went well for the prosecution. I think that Kyle Rittenhouse, he killed two people, and he badly wounded a third. And he was a wannabe. He was a wannabe roaming around with a semi-automatic weapon, pointing it at people. The judge gave some very important instructions for the prosecution and some very important victories for the prosecution. Everybody out there is listening to this and you're thinking, oh, well, the national media goes, well, the judge was hard on the prosecution and maybe the defense will win. I don't know who's going to win or lose, but I will tell you this. If I were a prosecutor, I'd be very, very pleased because what the prosecution got out of it was the provocation instruction. The provocation instruction says, you know, you may say you have a right to self-defense, but if you provoke the fight, your right to self-defense virtually evaporates. In this case, Rittenhouse was the guy roaming around with a gun pointing at people, and a couple of these people that he killed were unarmed. So that was argued very effectively to the jury. The second thing that the judge did, which is incredibly important, is he instructed the jury in what are called lesser included offenses. You know, initially you might have a first degree murder charge, and that's it for the two people who died. Well, first degree murder is a very difficult thing to prove because a skillful defense lawyer can chip away at it. You know, he'll say something like, well, Rittenhouse had to go there with a premeditated idea of killing people, and in particular, these two people. Well, Rittenhouse never heard of these two people before he went there. And the jury may not believe he went there intending to kill people, even though he's a wannabe. He's a wannabe, a cop wannabe. So the old terminology would have been second degree murder. Now there are lesser included offenses of homicide and reckless homicide and reckless attempted homicide. The point of all this is that first degree intentional homicide, which you knew in the old days as first degree murder, mandatory life in prison. Mandatory life in prison. The jury doesn't know that. They're not instructed on what could happen to Rittenhouse. Very sneakily, the defense, I was listening to him, said Rittenhouse's life is on the line as if he's going to be executed. Well, that's not. We got rid of the death penalty back in the 1850s in Wisconsin. Not going to be executed. And I think it's much more likely if the jury brings back a conviction that they'll bring it back in one of the lesser included offenses, which had they not been given that chance, they would have had a very, very tough decision. We get the guy in first degree murder or the equivalent or not. So the lesser included offenses and the provocation instruction, huge victories for the prosecution. This judge, he's a crusty old guy. I've known of him for 40 years, never appeared in front of him myself, although I've tried cases in Kenosha. He's experienced, he's querulous. I get all of that, but he does not have his thumb on the scales on this one. Those two instructions are key. They're absolutely key. And you know, nothing would be the same with one of these things if you didn't have assorted clowns and acrobats and idiots in the street. Two of them traveled up from Missouri. Do you remember the names Mark and Patricia McCloskey? Mark is a lawyer. Patricia McCloskey is his wife. They're very affluent. They have a beautiful house down in the St. Louis suburbs. Black Lives Matter group marched just down the road, didn't come on their property, and they point guns at them. Remember that? They pointed at one point a semi-automatic, the other one, I think, a rifle or a pistol. They were charged with felonies. You can't do that. Even if you think you can open carry or conceal carry, you can't pull out your gun and point it at somebody. That is a felony. You understand? Then they dumbed it down. They finally got off, I think, it was a misdemeanor. And then they got off on a municipal ordinance citation is what it's called. It's not criminal. These two clowns are up here. And the lawyer, Mark McCloskey, is grinning and smirking. We're just private folks. He gave an interview. We're just private folks. We're just up here to support a citizen. What the hell are they doing up here? We don't want you and your kind. We don't want you and your kind. You pointed guns at Black Lives Matter peaceful marchers in the road. In the road, because you didn't want them, what, walking by your house? Walking by your house? And this idiot grins into the camera. We're just folks. We're just folks. It was provocative as hell. Claims he didn't intend provocation. Baloney. This thing is a circus. Prosecution did a very good job. And I think there's a substantial chance of some conviction. We're going to a break. Line's still open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.